The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
You've got Devin McCourty, and then you've got your coworker in Rodney Harrison.
Oh, they're both coworkers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's
so
right.
So I think we bring them in, we tell them to
our
fight it out, and whoever wins, you know, we put on the list.
That's right.
You guys fight it out. Oh, yeah, baby. What's up? It's Chris Sims. Chris Sims unbuttoning. We got a fucking good one today, all right? It's football. It's August 3rd. It's the Hall of Fame game. I'm at the Hall of Fame, and I am here with a guy that, I don't know, we might maybe see in the Hall of Fame or at least talked about it a little. Devin McCourty is here with me today. It's going to be fun. What's up, man? Thanks for coming.
Yo, why on the intro do I have to fight Rodney? Oh, like that's not a good matchup for me.
Well, you're right. Some things, fighting is not going to – you're right. Well, he's 50, so I'm going to take
50.
You, okay?
He doesn't look like he's 50.
He doesn't look like he's 50, but he might pull a back muscle or something, right? So I'm going to give you – you know, that's even. In his prime, nobody wants to fight
exactly.
Rodney, right?
I don't think you lose that mentality.
No, you definitely – he's still – I know. Rodney has that – I say that loose pit bull effect, right?
Between him and I've done like Zooms with Brian Dawkins,
right.
And I'm sitting there like, bro, I would never want to have to go against these guys or anything. But I'm like, man, I wish I would have played with those guys.
Oh, yeah. Right?
That would have been fun.
I know. I got to play with Brian Dawkins 1 year, right? At the end of his career, he left Philly. I went to Denver.
Yep.
And I was there. And, you know, of course, he had two lockers. One was his locker, and then the other one was the shrine to Wolverine, right? But I've never seen a transformation of Brian Dawkins.
Of a guy, like, going to on the game field and,
like, during the week, he was the most soft-spoken, loving guy. You couldn't get him to do, like, show any emotion or anything. Walk in the locker room on game day, fucker was rolling around on the ground, like, and, like, being Wolverine.
That's when you truly see, like, you hear these stories, and then you're like, wow. Like, going to Baltimore, and I feel bad for all the young guys.
Right.
You've never got to see Ray Lewis come out, and I got to see it on Sunday Night Football. Oh, I was like, damn, this is a hard game.
This is real. They're ready.
Yeah.
When you got guys like that, they get the team ready.
It's
and then you're
experience.
Right. It really is, and no doubt about that. Thanks for coming. I do appreciate that. This got into the coworker thing with you fighting him, right? We did a little thing here with Sims Unbutton where we want, you know, I try to give some love to other people other than quarterbacks all the time, right?
Yep.
I mean, even as an ex-quarterback, I'm like, holy shit, can we talk about somebody else sometimes, right? And so we are in the process of going through a, you know, social media battle where we picked out five players from each team who's the best quarterback of the century or non-quarterback of the century, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we put you on that list there, right? You know, I gave you, Rodney was really awesome, but he was only with the Patriots for a short time. You were there forever. You are a Patriots. You're going to be in that Patriots ring of honor or whatever the hell. That's only a matter of time. But
hopefully.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
All right. So first things first, what's it been like? Just like your first offseason out of retirement.
Man, it's been fun. Yeah. I've stayed busy. You know, I think obviously you have a twin brother who retires a year before you. You get to kind of go through it with him and the back and forth we would have.
Yeah.
But since retiring, you know, whether it's going and meeting people for lunch, going to events, charity events, galas, I've been doing all of that. And then when I first wasn't 100% sure I was going to retire, I went on the media tour. I was like, man, if I do retire, I need a job. I can't be at home. My wife's crazy.
Right.
She hates when I come home and think like I'm the captain
in
the house.
Yeah, right. And you're doing it to her. She's like, she's the captain. I'm the captain here.
I'm like, why are we doing this like this? This should be done like this. This is more efficient. She's like, you got to go. So that was the main thing, man, trying to find a job, you know, knowing that I was going to probably retire, and then just enjoying the moment, man, doing different things. And, you know, being up in, you know, New England, I was there all the way up until like 2 weeks ago. Just the love and the reception I got from so many different people was awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's well-deserved, man. I mean, you're the ultimate professional. And I honestly think you're one of the most underrated safeties that I can remember in recent history, and this is not just because you're here. This is something I have said on this podcast many times. Really,
appreciate
people
that.
Don't realize how talented you were, how versatile, how smart. You were the quarterback of a defense that was very intricate and had a lot of details, and I don't think you get the credit you deserve. I hear you with the wife thing. My wife, when I play that game, she's always like, hey, when I start telling you what to say on Pro Football Talk, then you can start telling me how to, you know, clean the house and shit like that. So
okay,
I'm like, okay.
There's no response
okay,
to that.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, that's your department. Did you at any point get the itch this offseason where you were just like, man, like, I want to play? Or are you at total, like, ease with the situation?
Man, I probably would have got that if, you know, if I went to one of those places where, like, the offseason was cool and you came and you – but, you know, being in New England, I would go up there and visit those guys, and they would come in and be like, you know how much running we did today? And I'm like, nope, I don't, guys. I'll see you later. I'm headed out. So, no, I think, you know, I think obviously when the season starts and you're seeing guys out there making plays and that. But so far, you know, off-season program, no one ever wants to do that. And I've never heard a guy say, like, hey, I'm so excited to go back to
the That's
camp.
The truth.
That just doesn't happen. Right? So I have not got that itch.
There was a point, I mean, my first year out, I was sad. But my career, I didn't get to fulfill, you know, some of the things I wanted to do in the career, right? You should feel fulfilled for the most part. I hope that. But, like, I know there was a point in my first offseason where I found it really refreshing, and I didn't even realize I was going to do this, where I was just like, man, I don't got to wake up and, like, think about what am I going to eat? And, like, I got to be perfect with my diet. And, like, it was the little things like that that I kind of enjoyed, where not stressing about, man, I haven't thrown a football in a day and a half or 2 days, or I haven't gone to the weight room, or I haven't squatted in, you know, 4 or 5 days, right? And, like, that was, to me, like, the best thing about retirement at first.
And I don't think people understand that. Just the anxiety every day.
Exactly.
You're working and doing a job where – the people who are your bosses, their number one job is to find your replacement.
Right.
Every single day. So no matter in season, off season, you're always thinking like, man, did I do enough today?
Yeah.
Like, am I going to be good? Am I going to, you know, if I'm going to start, am I going to be able to still be the same player? Like, that's what goes through your mind when you're playing.
Exactly.
Every
you're
single
paranoid.
Day. Yes.
You're stressed.
So it's just that kind of like, oh, I could take this huge boulder off my shoulders.
Right.
I can relax a little bit. And then I think for all of us, you find new passions and different things that you want to do. But I don't think anything brings that stress that football brought. Even though you loved it, you enjoyed it, it put a lot of stress on your
definitely,
life.
Definitely, definitely. You realize, like, damn, I had a, you know, I had an 8-year career. I was like, damn, I had a knot in my stomach for 8 years. I didn't even fucking realize it. I was always stressing.
This feels good now.
I know. It does. It does. All right, so the transition here, you know. Did you find that easy? Get into meeting? You're a natural. I just want to say that right away. I can already see it. I don't need to see you tonight on Sunday Night Football or anything. I could just tell by our interaction, our rehearsal yesterday, doing this with you. I saw you on, you know, some podcast clips you've done and things like that. But I'm like, I mean, has it been easy for you? You feel good about this transition and what you're doing?
I do feel good, but I think it came from, like, the preparation. You know, when Jay got to New England in 2018, our marketing guys and everybody, we came up with the idea, we're like, let's start a podcast.
Yeah.
And, you know, going on a podcast, you know, we would do once a week, but we would do it in between, you know, the off day or that Monday after meetings. We would try to get it in there. Now we're scrolling through Twitter and reading articles of, like, what happened in the NFL because we're so focused on the game
week.
So then we kind of built out the run of show each day, each time that we did it. So just going through that process and seeing it just from that small level that we did our podcast at, and then once I during the bye week and then once the season was over, going on different shows and seeing how they operated, going on Good Morning Football for a whole week.
Right, right.
That kind of consistency. Once I did those things, I was like, all right, I think I can do
this. You
can
do it, yeah.
Let me be confident and go out there and do what I can do and have fun with it.
Yeah, I mean, reps are always great. I know you're going to prepare. And then that's, to me, what when people always ask, like, I have ex-players, I mean, what do you, you know, how do you do that? You got to work, man.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to be yourself and speak freely and be able to be a knucklehead. And
you got
to
know what you're
talking about. Or you're always going to be trying to find a way to bullshit your way out of some conversation, and then you can't be yourself. You, I mean, New England podcast while you're playing. Woo! Did you get any warnings where you were like, you better not give me any of the state of the fucking union, okay, McCourty?
Man, I did a few things at the end of my career that other people come up, they're like, how the hell did you do that? And I was like, you don't ask permission. You just go and you do it. And then you wait. Like, I was walking through the hall, and I don't think Bill ever listened, but Nick Caserio would listen to it. And we would walk through the halls, and Nick would be like, hey, man, when you going to have me on the podcast? And I would go, Nick, you tell me whenever want to come on this podcast, you come on. But, you know, for the most part, it's like you said, we never really got into deep conversations about what Bill said in and out of meetings or anything like that. We had fun with it. We cracked jokes. We had Vince Wolfert one time. Big Vince came back. We had Milton on the pod. We had my mom, a couple different players, David Andrews. So it was always like just having a good time and laughing and joking. And then we would talk about other things that went on, whether it was in sports or in pop culture.
Yeah, right.
So it
right.
was fun. But even going, like, I went on CBS during the bye week.
Yeah.
And I remember I already said yes to doing it, and Stacey James, our head PR guy, comes. He goes, I think it's like Thursday, our last day. And he goes, hey, you going on CBS this weekend, huh? And I was like, yeah. How'd you know that? He's like, yeah, they reached out to me. I was like, yeah, I figure, you know, this might be it, Stacey. I need to start listening. And he didn't say anything. It was cool. So, you know, anytime you go, when you play New England, anytime you do anything, it creates headlines, and you have to be okay with
that's
that.
Right.
They're not used to anything coming out of there. So
no.
If you say the smallest thing, five people write articles about it, and I've gotten used to that, and, you know, I enjoy it.
You
now.
Never said anything that got you in trouble, like where Bill was like, hey, don't say that on the pod, or don't give, you know, did he ever give you like, hey, that's a little too much information, anything?
No, I honestly don't think Bill listened
yeah,
to
Yeah, no, I'm
all.
Sure he did, but I'm sure like I'm Bears sure, or yeah, Nick Caserio.
I don't know how no one reported back to him.
Right.
But I think, you know, especially Bill thought the coolest thing ever was when Jay joined the team. I remember one time that year we're playing Tennessee and we're in Nashville. We're about to take the knee and do our prayer and go out. And we're waiting for everybody to come up. And Bill just looks at us and he just starts smiling. It's the most awkward thing. And I'm like, why is he smiling at us? And I think it was simply because he looked at us side by side as we're going out. Jay's back in Tennessee.
Right.
First time playing back in Tennessee since he got released there. And he's just smiling. I think he truly understood that. You know, he's on the coaching staff. He's the head coach. Steve Belichick's there. Brian Belichick's there. He's coaching with his kids. He's watching them work together. And I think he did. I think he marveled at the idea of like, hey, we got to bring these guys together and play together. And, you know, we had a lot of fun. Now, we didn't know it was going to lead to a Super Bowl.
Right.
But maybe, you know, Bill being Bill, maybe
he could see it.
He knew it was coming.
The evil Dark Lord saw it coming in the future, right? I mean, two things jump out to me about what you're saying there, right? I mean, Bill, if you work and do things right way, we actually talked about this last night. He gives you a little bit more free range if he trusts you, right? So he must have trusted you.
We had a little bit.
Yeah, you were in the trust tree with him for sure. So that's amazing. It really is. And I mean, you're right about the New England thing. Like, how quickly did you have to learn as a rookie, like, I better shut the fuck up and just, you know, say yes to the media and no, and we're going to play hard. And
first preseason game.
Right.
You come in the locker room. I remember, you know, we started with joint practice. Our first preseason game was against the Saints.
Yeah.
So now you're this little rookie. You got Marcus Colson in practice, Drew Brees. So
They came to
Gillette.
I was there.
Joint practices.
I'm
like, man, this is cool. So we go out there. I play well in the first game. I have two kickoff returns that go for like 50 yards. So I'm like, dang, this is going to be crazy, like talking to the media. And Bill comes in and he goes, hey, you know, we got the media in here, but I tell you one thing. You rookies, you don't know shit about playing the NFL. Yeah, you played a little preseason.
Yeah.
How about today when the media comes in, you all just shut the fuck up? So I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, if they ask me a question. So as soon as he finished talking, no shower, no anything, undressed, get dressed.
You just got out.
Beeline out of the locker room because I didn't want anybody asking me any questions.
I was
a first-round pick. I was like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And I did that all four preseason games. Just not to
so
talk to the media
to
make sure. And you talk to the media when Stacey would come and be like, hey, we're going to have you do some media today.
Yeah.
And as a rookie, that's what you
that's what
stuck
you
do. To.
So you see that, and then you watch the veterans a little bit, and you start to learn, like, okay, this is how I got to talk. And
then you figure out, like, Yeah, Bill's telling you that, but he doesn't really mean don't talk.
Right.
But he's warning you. Yeah,
be tight-lipped.
Exactly.
Right, right.
Exactly.
Who was, while we're on the subject, the most egregious or the guy where you were always like, and they got a mic in and they were like, oh, he might not listen to Bill or who?
Randy Moss.
Yeah. I thought you might say Gronk, but then when Randy came out, I was like, yeah, yeah.
Gronk eventually got to right. that. But my rookie year, Randy Moss, everything was great. Then week one, we play Cincy, and, you know, the big thing was we don't talk about injuries and we don't talk about contracts.
Oh, right.
And the media. And then, like, Randy goes on, like, a 10-minute, like, I don't want to call it a rant, but this 10-minute speech. And he's like, you know, I know what kind of receiver I am. I know they're not going to pay me. But, and I was just like, oh, damn, I thought that was a big no-no. And then that's when I realized the business in the NFL, week four, right. bye week, Randy Moss traded to the Minnesota Vikings.
Damn.
And that's how the beginning of my career was that.
Like, right.
The things that they talked about not doing or guys showed up late, whatever it was, if it didn't follow the kind of culture and the rules of the Patriots, it was like that, and that person would be gone, either traded, released. I just remember being a rookie and being like, man, this business is cutthroat.
Oh, definitely.
Just seeing so
Especially
many guys
there.
Coming in. Exactly.
Yeah. Maybe the most cutthroat organization there is.
Mike Teal grew up around
Jersey,
you.
Right.
Jersey guy, yeah, Rutgers right. guy. I remember my rookie year, Bill calls me, and he goes, hey. And you get called into Bill's office as a rookie. I'm like, I didn't do anything. Like, what? And he's like, hey, what can you tell me about Mike Teal? So right. I'm like, oh. Great guy, let us, blah, blah, blah. Teal was there for a week.
Right, right.
Didn't get to show anything, barely got any snaps 1 week, and that was it.
That was it. I actually had they asked me about a guy. Remember Bo Scaife? Do you remember the tight end?
Yep, Tennessee tight end for
he
Tennessee.
Came into camp for a little
yep,
bit.
He did.
They were asking me. He was my best friend in college, right? Uh-huh. He's still one of my best
Texas
friends in the world.
Guy,
right,
yep.
Yeah, yeah. So they asked me. I was like, man, Bo's talented. I mean, when Bellow's healthy, he's the man. And then it was one of those days at practice, like the third day of practice, where, like, you know, you guys make a mistake and Bill would just go, run, fucking run.
Just
and you
go.
And Bo was out of shape. And I remember I'm a quality control coach. And I remember going, man, Bo's like 40 yards behind everybody. He might get cut today. Like he might. And then the next day it was like the same thing. And he was way behind everybody. And I was like, oh, man, they asked me about him. I said all these good things and they're going to cut his ass. And they cut his ass right then.
And then you went to media.
And then I went, yeah, then not long after that. And so for all those out there, I have known about Devin McCourty since my brother was in high school. So that was, you know, 2000, what, 7, 8, those are your 6, 5, right.
Yep.
Holy crap. I mean, yes. Devin McCourty, Jason McCourty, St. Joe's Regional High School, Montvale, New Jersey, rival school is Don Bosco, where my brother went, or Bergen Catholic, where Brian Cushing and company were, right? And we had St. Peter's Prep in the conversation at that time. Will Hill and company, right?
Yep.
Remember
Will
that?
Will was a little younger than me.
Oh, yeah. He was a baller in
he
high
was
school.
A problem.
Oh, my gosh, he was. He picked 6 Matt in the state championship game to win the game, actually. But so I've known him for a long time. And then, of course, was in New England, you know, your second year there. That's when, you know, I got to meet you a little bit. So there are some history here. Mm-hmm. But, bam, I know. I laugh with my brother every now and then because he's like, man, in high school – man, I had to play some DBs. I mean, it was Jason and Devin McCourty at 2 corners, and they had Junior Gallette playing defensive end or tackle at that time. So that was crazy. But that's how I first got to know you. All right, so I want to unpack and like some New England. I'm just going to be fanboy. That's what I'm good at, and I'm going to ask you a whole bunch of shit. I'm going to get to some thoughts. I got some like questions from the listeners, and they knew you were coming, and I just want to throw a few things out to you, just like what's going on in the NFL right now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, first one, at 17th Bird, right? The whole video with Trevon Diggs and Dak Prescott. Have you seen that here recently, right?
Yep.
Right. So his question is it commonplace for DBs to call their starting QBs a B word, okay? I swear all of these. So this is one I won't say out loud, okay? I know talking crap to your teammate is one thing, but when it's your star player on defense calls you your QB the B word, where does it come from jawing to disrespect? When does it come from jawing to disrespect?
I see it like this.
Yeah.
When you get on that field, there is no, like, that's our starting quarterback. There's times in training camp where, like, Coach Belichick will have to come in and remind the guys, like, hey, like,
we're
one
a team.
Team.
Right.
Like, we're one because until you get to the first preseason game or joint practices, you're going at it. So there was times in practice where Tom's mother effing us, like, I mean, cursing a guy out on defense and, like, I don't know if people think, like, because you play with, like, these great players that when they curse you out, you're sitting there like, okay, man, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, right.
No, like, there was times I remember, And 14, we're having a great day, right? Yeah. I think we had an interception early, and then I think Revis picked six, and we all run to the end zone, and Bill's trying to keep the drill going, and we're all jumping up and down. Hell no, we won't go. Hell no. And you've been around Tom a little bit. Tom gets
pissed. Oh, he's pissed. You're showing him up. You're showing practice up, everything.
So now he gets pissed. So Jamie Collins starts yelling, man, you over there acting like a little, like going back and forth.
Right.
And by the time we got to the locker room, it was laughs and jokes
because
we understand, like, especially in training camp, if you can't have that, if you can't have two sides of the ball, it was like Bill would always say it, we need it to be a heavyweight fight. We need one person to throw a haymaker, and you take it on the chin, and you get back, and then you throw a haymaker. He's like, it should be a back and forth.
Yes.
And within that comes the trash talk.
Right.
Like, I mean, remember what we saw, Cam Newton and Josh Norman face-to-face? You're telling me Josh Norman and that defense didn't respect what Cam did on offense?
Exactly.
No, they did, but it's in the heat of playing.
Yeah.
Like, you go at it.
Tempers flare. Damn, you get ornery and fucking crazy when it's training camp. I mean, damn, you got no life, you know? You got.
Especially those guys, I think they're in a dorm and all that. Like, when you're. Oh, you don't see your family.
No,
like,
right. There's nothing. There's no home cooked meals. There's never a moment to yourself, you know? You don't get, you know, some loving from the wife or the girlfriend. It all starts to get frustrating during training camp, all right? That's the way it goes, right? You know?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury. The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
All right, so here's another one from a common listener here, our Corey Joskowitz. He wants to know from you, who's the most difficult player you ever had to tackle in the open field?
Oh, throw Marshawn Lynch up there.
Because of the pure size and power?
Marshawn Lynch was probably number one, and it was because when we would watch him on film, it felt like he was always balanced, right? Yeah, Everybody remembers his time in Seattle, but early in my career, I played him, and even in Buffalo.
Oh, that's right.
So in Buffalo, you would get the 1-2 punch of him and Fred Jackson.
Oof.
So now you're like, man. Then, you know, later CJ Spiller came there, but Marshawn was always one of those guys that when he broke out, you didn't know how he's going to try to get that angle. If he was going to let you kind of think you're going to wrap him, then use that offhand and throw you.
Right.
So he was always a tough guy. And, you know, I think even, you know, later in my career playing Baltimore, like
Lamar
Jackson coming out
That's
there
insane.
In the open field.
Right.
And now you're sitting there, for one, he's a quarterback. But, you know, between him and Josh Allen, when they got out there to you, it was like, all right, we got to lock in and try to get these guys on the ground. So, yeah, man. And I'll tell you one thing. When you play free safety and you're in the open field, every guy that gets to you untouched is a really hard tackle.
Oh, of course it is.
Some of those guys are exceptions, and it's just tough. Like, hey, and I tell guys, like, a guy would miss a tackle, and I'm like, hey, man, like, you're not going to make all – if you make all those tackles, you're going to be known as one of the greatest tacklers that ever played a game. Like, those are hard tackles, but – yeah, those are some of the guys that I used to.
I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. Well, I mean, that's what I say this on here a lot of times. The safety's got to save the play a lot of the time.
Yep.
You got to be fast and run somebody down so they don't score an 80-yard touchdown. Or sometimes you got to take one for the team and go, damn,
I'm going to get run over.
I'm going to get run over, but he's going to trip on me on the way down, right?
I remember Bill would hit you with this sarcasm. So I forgot one of the games I had a terrible play in. It was either a run or a pass, but the guy got by me, and we come in the film room the next day, and Bill goes, I mean, look behind you. Like, there's no one. No one's behind you. Like, if you don't do it, then who else do you effing want to do it, McCourty? And I'm just sitting there like, and I think it's like 2 years ago. It's like year 11 or 12 for me. So I'm like, Bill, I know. Right. But it was just like, that's how he would get you going. And then you walk away pissed off that he did it and lock in on making sure it doesn't happen again.
Right. Who's the best open field tackler you ever saw, like, or played with, or who's a guy that you looked at and was like, damn, they're unbelievable in the open field?
It would definitely be Pat Chung.
Yeah.
Playing with Chung.
Yeah.
And he would get some of the worst guys that you could have to tackle in the flat with like 10 yards of space. And Chung would always tell me, like, yo, if you just come with your palms up and you'll never miss a tackle. Break down with your palms up. And I go, Pat, what the hell does your palms up have to do with anything? He goes, I don't know. It's just palms up making me stay balanced. And he would make, I mean, some great tackles on, you know, Jamal Charles, like all these Chris Johnson, all these backs that were just phenomenal when I first got in the NFL.
Right.
And he would be in there breaking down one-on-one with them. And I'm like, you're running over there like, oh, man, I hope he makes this tackle.
Yeah.
I wrote like, man, good tackle, Pat. That's what I'm talking about. Because I'm like, if you didn't make it, it would be 15 more yards and I had to come.
Right,
so,
right.
Nah, he was a great open field tackle.
You got me thinking about a subject with Belichick a little bit when I was there, he liked to piss Wes Welker off a little bit, right? And he'd always push his buttons. And there was a thought in the building. Bill did that deliberately because he thought when Wes was pissed off, he played his best, right? You talked to me. We talked on the flight out here a little bit. We were sitting next to each other, and we got onto talking and quarterbacks and all that. Mm-hmm. And you said you always thought that like Belichick talked up Rodgers or other great quarterbacks in the pregame because he thought it pissed off Tom and he'd get the best Tom.
Yeah, and I always tell people like a part of Tom's greatness was allowing Bill to even coach him hard because I remember, you know, as a young guy, you walk in and you hear Coach Belichick coach Tom or rip Tom on something, it put the fear of God in every other player because you're watching and Tom's like the guy you watch, you know, he's so old. He was the guy you watched growing up.
Perfect, right?
Yeah, and you're seeing that. Right. And then we would play quarterbacks, whether it would be Aaron or we play Peyton. And, you know, both those guys stepping up, you know, obviously Aaron would run a little bit. Peyton wouldn't. And Peyton, you know, it was Peyton and Tom.
Yeah.
So we would always talk about, you know, we got to bring pressure through the middle of the defense. We got to, you know, we can't let Peyton step up. And it would be funny because he would say it a good, like, six times during the week. Like, when this guy steps up, he's the best quarterback in the NFL. And you're sitting there and you're like, that is what Tom is. When Tom steps up, that's when he's his best.
Exactly.
But what I always respected about Bill was you never would have heard him say that in the media because that was for the locker room. Right. That was for the guys. That was for Tom, but that was also for the other guys in the locker room to know, like, this is a big game. Like, I'm not going to go out and say it, but the guy on the other side, that everyone thinks he's great, but we think our guy's the best.
Yeah.
We, as a defense, we need to prove that our guy's the best
by
doing these different things. And it was always, I mean, early in my rookie year when Peyton was in Indy, we had a classic game where we went up and then he came back, then he went to Denver, and we had all of those battles. So it was just so much fun. And then seeing that as you got older and understanding kind of the philosophy of what Bill was doing and how he was triggering different guys a certain way but motivating the team in the same way. So guy's a genius, man. Just being around him, obviously, for my whole career, 13 years, and being in the squad meeting rooms and seeing that, but then also behind the scenes.
The whole team,
bit,
coaching everything.
Yep, seeing our captain's meetings and how he would break things down on a different level.
Yep.
I learned a lot of football and how to run a team.
No, I know. People don't really realize, unless you've been in the building or been in maybe even some other buildings to compare it or whatever, to just know what he is. And I try to tell people all the time, and I think a lot of coaches don't even want to hear it once they start down that road. They just want to hear, oh, he had Tom Brady, he was just lucky.
That's the go-to.
That's the go-to for every coach. Who couldn't have done it with Tom Brady? I want to be like, well, Tom Brady wasn't Tom Brady the first three Super Bowls, everybody.
And I always say there's so many other great quarterbacks. Like, you're not going to tell me, like, Aaron Rodgers
he
and Peyton
won
Manning
more
and
Super
all those
Bowls.
Guys.
Yeah.
Those guys are great quarterbacks, too, but it's hard to win a Super Bowl you know,
consistently
two or
and
three
always
times,
being
but,
it.
Yeah, right. They won six of those. Like, that's hard to do.
No doubt about it. It was a total team effort there, and Brady continued to get greater and greater as his career went on, which is crazy, right? He do think, like, did you ever feel like he had a way of trying to motivate you, or was he just kind of straight up, like, what the fuck are you doing?
Well, I got a good amount of that, but I always used to laugh because we would play teams, and, you know, as the NFL started to transition, where you didn't really have the kind of 220, 225 safeties that were back there and could knock your head off, because you really couldn't do that anymore. We would play teams, and he would go, I mean, their safeties are light. They're all former corners. They're 190. They don't want to really hit anybody. And I would sit back there like,
hey, that's me.
Former corner, 190. Like,
right.
What are you saying about me? So I don't know if he ever did on purpose or he was just going.
Yeah.
But I would always be like, man, I'm gonna show him. Like, I'm not this former corner lightweight guy. I'm gonna go. So I think all those little things, like, he knew.
Or tactical.
Yeah, I think he kind of knew. Yeah. Like, the guy starting for us at safety.
Right.
Starter for us at corner. Like, I know he knows that, and I'm going to make sure he hears it every time we play another one of these guys.
Right. Because he wants you to be physical and act like you're 225 and do whatever else, right? Yeah, it's amazing. You're right. And, I mean, he was a part of an era, like, when he was the defensive coordinator for the Giants and all that, where, safeties, linebackers were 255 or 260.
Well, our linebackers were still
you're really the one of the only teams that kind of held on to that.
When I got when I got to NFL, Brandon Spikes was drafted same class as me.
Cinder block for a head.
We got to the facility. I was like, dude, what position are you playing?
Right.
He was like, Brandon Spikes. I was like, you're the linebacker from Florida. I was like, bro, you would have played three technique for our team at Rutgers. I was like, you're 260. There's no our nose tackle's, I think, 255.
Right, right.
So you would have been a nose tackle for us.
Yeah.
But that's what we had. And those guys, I mean, I watched between Spikes, Mayo,
Dante Hightower.
I watched those guys come
Jamie
down.
Jamie Collins. People don't realize how big all those guys are.
And they would hit some offensive linemen. Like, I watch Brandon Spikes knock guys clearly out of the game.
No doubt. Yeah, that's why I call him Cinderblock Head. Yeah. I mean, he is like a sledgehammer. One of the greatest collisions I ever saw in my life, you might remember this, in the stadium, going into 2013 season, Nate Solder got Spikes around the goal line.
And Nate broke out.
I mean, yes. Because I think it was the first time anybody hit Spikes like that.
I remember it.
And the big Russian, Nate Solder, which I called him, the big Russian. He had the big German and Vollmer. That's what I called. Oh, here goes, you know. And he was so proud of himself that he hit Spikes like that.
Well, and I remember because at that time, Spikes kept knocking people out. Like, or he would hit a lineman a little bit unnecessary. So Nate hits him, Spikes falls.
And Nate got on top and finished it. That's
jumps
right.
on top of him. That's so right. I'm like the first guy over there. So I'm 190, but I'm like, I got to have my teammates back. So I go in there. And as Nate's kind of getting up, so he's on one knee, I push Nate. He backs up a little bit. So then one of the linemen pushing me, I go like 5 yards, get a little run and start pushing another lineman, doesn't move. That's when I was like, yep, I'm a DB.
Yeah, yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah, that's right. They're fight. Too damn big. I'm
and
not
I remember
messing with that crew.
That was the third fight of training camp.
Right.
And after that fight, Bill makes us run, and Bill goes, next person getting a fight, we're running the rest of practice. Vince Wilfork comes in the middle with the whole team and goes, anybody else fight after we run, you gonna fucking fight me. And I remember everybody's face was like, well, I guess fighting's done for training camp.
Yeah, that's right.
Because Vince was that guy. You just didn't want to test it and see where he would go. He was nuts.
No, he was nuts. He called me crab meat when I was there. And I was like, why does he call me that? I didn't figure it out. He's like, hey, crab meat. And I was like, damn, what? I don't get it. I'd laugh. I'm like, oh, yeah.
He's like, what'd I do to him?
I don't get it. And he's like, and one day I was like, wait, what? Why do you call me crab meat every day? I don't fucking get it. And he's like, because you're a bottom feeder right now, man. You're a bottom feeder. And I was like, damn, I am a bottom feeder right now. I'm doing all the dirty shit for the organization. They're master motivators, Belichick. I mean, I learned that because of Parcells, Belichick. My dad always says he didn't realize his first name began with a PH until he got done with the career, because it was always fucking Sims, fucking this, fucking that. So, they're great that way. All right, a few more questions before I start to pepper you here. At Quinn Johnson wants to know the most intimidating player you ever played against. I know Marshawn is intimidating. I don't know if it's the same question, but was there a tight end, a lineman, anybody that you were just like, damn, that guy right there?
For me, it was Steven Jackson.
Steven Jackson.
Steven Jackson. Oh. We talked about it the other day at dinner.
Yeah.
My rookie year preseason game, he came out there.
Hercules.
Jersey was curled up, abs, 6'2", and you're just like, that dude's a running back?
Right.
And I just remember coming out, and, you know how it goes in the locker room. That legend starts before the game. Like, we're in the locker room, and guys are like, yo. Wait till you see Steven Jackson come out there. So I would say him, and then the first time my rookie year playing against Adrian Peterson, because as a kid, you watch the highlights. So you watch what he did to defensive backs. You watch how he ran. So when you first play him, you're like, damn, I hope I don't end up on one of those highlights.
No doubt.
Those two guys were just very intimidating. The size, the way they ran, just ruthless on how they would run guys over.
Yeah, Adrian Peterson's on the short list of guys where, when I was on the field with him and I was holding the clipboard, but I was just going, man, we're not on the same – nobody out here is on the same level as that guy.
Yeah, like we don't deserve to be on the field.
Like, we look like peewees, and he looks like he's, a professional or whatever.
He's little giants.
Man, it really was.
That's what it is.
It was unbelievable. He is definitely one of the best players I ever saw in person in my life. How about we got one from International Touch. He wants to know, did you have a go-to pregame meal or routine?
I was always a big, French toast, eggs, and bacon guy for all our 1 p.m. starts.
Yeah.
Then at night, I just always have some pasta and some grilled chicken.
When you were in New England and you had a night game, did you guys have to stay in the hotel the whole day? Or were you allowed to go?
You were allowed to go home.
You were allowed to go home.
Yeah, you were allowed
to
go home.
Okay, that's good.
So that was cool until I started having kids.
Right. Then you were like, I don't know if I want to go home.
That changes a little bit. I would tell my wife, like, hey, I'm going to stay here for a little bit longer, take a nap, and then I'll come back and catch the kids in the back end before I go to the game.
Yeah. All right. So that's all I'm going to go with the listener questions right now. Now I'm going to get the Chris Sims questions, all right? So first thing I want to know is, like, when you got to New England, right? One, was the NFL what you expected? Two, right? What was I going to say? The NFL what you expected? And two, when was the moment you went, okay, I can play in this league. I belong here.
Yeah. So obviously I said my brother gets drafted a year before me, goes to Tennessee with Jeff Fisher.
So that gives you a little confidence in itself, right?
But he's calling me. He's like, man, we wore pants in practice three times all year. Like, yo, the NFL. Because we went at Rutgers with Coach Shiano. It was
old
it was
school.
Rough. Like, it was old.
Right.
He was like, man, I'm telling
you.
How
they do it at Ramapo High School in Jersey.
Yeah, I know. He told us some crazy Ramapo High School stories. But he would tell me these things. So I'm sitting there my last year like, man, I can't wait. Go to NFL, like, live like a pro. I get to New England, 9 straight days of double sessions.
Pads everyone, right.
And I'm like, dude, that's not what the NFL is. The NFL is supposed to be cool, having fun. And then the moment that I felt like, all right, I'll be okay, week 1. Like, week 1, we get Cincinnati the year, they get T.O. So you got Chad and you got T.O. on one side, and I'm the rookie corner. So go out there, first play of the game, T.O. runs the fade, runs the 9 route. And I remember I'm running, I lean, I look back, and he kind of goes to swipe me by for the big catch on top of your head.
Right,
and the last minute, reach back, like grab 3 of his fingers and the ball, incomplete pass. And I'm like, whew, all right, I'm going to be okay. Like, first play, I mean, it's Terrell Owens. Like, growing up, like, this is T.O., Hall of Fame. And I made that plan. I was like, all right, I'll be all right in this league. I think I'll be able to make it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's –
That would have went the other way. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, then you got Ocho Cinco. I mean, he must have been, like, gushing about Ocho Cinco because that was, like, his favorite player before he got to New England.
And then Chad, the week leading up to the game, finds my Twitter. So starts tweeting me and Darius Butler, his two starting corners.
Right.
Can't wait till Sunday. I'm going to embarrass you guys. Like, talking trash. And, it was an awesome moment for me because I was like, yo, Ocho Cinco just tweeted me. I was like, hey, man, tweet me again. I got so many followers from you just tweeting me just now. But, yeah, I think with Bill talking about Chad, but we had a little bit more of a plan for Chad going into that game. But, Chad, I think, finished with like 175 or something. He had a big day.
Yeah, you couldn't stop him in his prime. He was damn good. I mean, he really was. All right, so when – now you're rookie, whatever, your first few years in the NFL, or what, I don't even care your first few years in the NFL. What do you think was traditionally the most intense, stressful week for your team, the opponent or whoever it was, right? Like, I know Jets week was always a big week because Bill wanted to give it to the Jets and they were in the AFC East and, they kind of screwed with him there early in his career. When did you always feel like the coaches and everybody were the most tense?
It was always Peyton Manning.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
And then it was if we played a coach that was in New England before.
Oh,
so
right.
My rookie year, we played Cleveland, and Brian Daboll was the offensive coordinator for Cleveland.
Right.
Peyton Hillis ended up beating us, I think, like 40-14. And then the different offensive coordinators that I wouldn't know when I was young, but like traditionally have given Bill problems through the years. So Kubiak, North Turner, Andy Reid, like we would play these guys, and you know, sometimes we play these guys and their teams were terrible.
Yeah, like, right.
It was just not a good team.
But it was personal but to it him
would,
or?
Oh, it would yeah. be, you don't understand the way this offensive coordinator would have game plan. And we'd be sitting there like, dude, what are we, like, they have four wins. And for some reason that we would get in those games, like we played Cleveland in 13, and I believe North Turner was the coordinator with Jason Campbell was the starting quarterback.
Sure.
And I think they might have had four or five wins at the time at the end of the season. We had to come back and only won because an onside kick, because their game plan. But this was also Josh Gordon. Like Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon took a slant.
Oh, the
80
skinny
yard.
Post right yes, down the left side there. Yeah,
so,
I remember.
But the game plan and what they did as an offense.
They knew Bill.
They exactly.
Right.
And those would be the worst weeks for us.
Right.
Just dealing with that. Peyton, former coach, or one of those offensive coordinators that had traditionally done well against Bill.
I got to be on the other side of that in 2009 with Josh McDaniels and the Denver Broncos.
Uh-huh.
And funny thing is Josh the whole week was like, we're not going to outthink Bill. We're not going to outthink Bill. But, you know, I'm going to try to find a, you know, something I know he does. And, like, we went to Wednesday practice, nothing. Thursday he came in with, like, this smile on his face. And, like, he had figured something out. And just quick for you, I don't even know if you know this, but he remembered that if we get in the wildcat, the defense will automatic check to cover three,
yep.
right? So we got in the wildcat with no Sean Marino, and then he would bring the quarterback back in
and go to regular
and go, and we'd run to our regular offense, and they never
know
really,
the coverage.
And we knew the coverage, and we ended up upsetting them that day. But I could see where Bill would be stressed about the guys that know him a little more
back then. The next year when I got there, we had two wildcat calls like that.
I bet you that was
why.
That
was it. It was fire two and it was fire three.
I bet you he added one more just
one
because
more,
he was like, Bill, like, I can't like.
And
Josh.
I remember, and it's funny to know that because then we used to get into if we have time,
gotta get out.
Let's check a regular defense,
right?
And that
right.
was always my job. Like if
right.
you think we have time, get us in a regular defense, and if we're in fire two, get us in just basic cover three. If
sure.
we're in fire three,
right.
just get us to a cover two. Just so they don't know what we're in, yeah.
If you could allude on it more, right? I mean, it's you brought his name up and Peyton Manning, and of course you got in the league, and it was just Brady Manning, Brady Manning, uh-huh. Brady Manning, and you know Rodgers was slowly starting to creep into the conversation there too. But like, give me, you're with Belichick, the mastermind, the genius, and now you're playing the guy who was the mastermind, genius coach at the line of scrimmage, like uh-huh. just. Preparation of the week for Peyton, things that jumped out to you on the field. You know, he's more physically gifted than people want to give him credit for, but just go ahead. Just the floor is yours on this one.
Yeah, man, I think especially because I think we might have played Peyton call like week 8 or 9. So I had already experienced what preparation looked like, right? We played Phillip Rivers during that time.
Right.
I think we played, I don't remember if we played Big Ben before or after that, but
I had some quarterbacks.
Yeah, and
feel
I got in a rhythm
right,
of how we're going to prepare, what we're going to do.
Right.
And we get to that next week, and you know, we played the game before that Sunday, and, you know, they kind of end that meeting Sunday night and Monday like, all right, we need to get ready. This week's going to be totally different. For you rookies, it's going to be a week like you've never had before. And I'm like, what the hell are we talking about?
How could it be more intense like, than it already is?
And we come in, and they're like, all right, we're not going to signal any calls. Nothing's going to come from the sideline. Everybody's going to get little wristbands with calls on it, with a number on it. Everything's going to be done by a number. And I'm like, yo, what are we doing? Like, we haven't done this all year. And James Sanders, Brandon Merriweather, they was like, bro, you don't get it. Playing this guy's different. They was like, no matter what, at some point in the game, he's going to know every call that we're in. And we jump out. I want to say it was like 21-zip.
21-zip, something like
at
that.
At halftime.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, these guys don't know what they talk about. We getting that Peyton Manning. And I think I had an interception in the first half. This is going great.
Right.
Next thing you know, it's 24-21.
Right.
Peyton Manning has the ball.
Yeah.
Driving to beat us.
Ugh.
In the fourth quarter. And I think they had a little miscommunication on a route, and James Sanders gets an interception, and he intercepts the ball with like a minute and 20 left as Peyton was driving in to beat us. And that's when I was like, oh, this guy's really right. We had him confused. We would line up whenever we played, and we line up in a cover two shell and everything. So as a corner, they're like, hey, we're going to play man-to-man from cover two. You're going to be 3 yards off. I'm like, coach, that's going to put me in no man's land. Like, I don't want to – like, either I need to get up and press or I need to get off. He's like, nope, this is how we're going to play this week. He's like, you're going to play cover two from there, cover three from there. Man, everything is going to be from that same spot all game. And I'm like, yo, they can't be serious.
Right.
And
but they felt like rolling the dice there was better than him knowing exactly what you were in or seeing that.
The biggest thing was don't disguise. Let's not go here and roll here. And
right.
It was like he knows that. Like, that's a waste of time.
Right.
Just give him the same look. But I don't know. Like
when he snaps the ball, then you had to get where you had to go.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
But he went in at halftime and
figured
he
must have
met and he knew and he was on it.
Did you sense like Brady extra tense in those weeks, despite what Bill might have said to him, wax poetically about, you know, Peyton or whatever? Did you always sense like, ooh, this is personal between these two or anything that way?
I'll give Brady credit for that. I never really felt like that at any time playing with him. Like, you knew his fire would increase, but it was for those games, right? The playoffs is when, to me, you really saw like Brady be Brady. Or if we had a big letdown in a game, then he would come out. But for the most part, when we got to the playoffs, he would be on the team about understanding what it took, how we couldn't have, you know, a few bad plays or a bad series. And he would do that across the ball, like whether it was special teams, defense, offense, he would make sure everybody knew exactly what we needed to do. And that's probably when you saw the most fire come out of him was in those weeks, especially if it wasn't going well. If it was going well, he kind of let everybody play their role. We had different leaders and guys who did different things on the team. He let all that play out. But to me, he always kind of had that single eye on, all right, I need to do this if we fall short. Like, I need to be kind of that last man that makes sure everything goes the right way.
Yeah, right. I always appreciated, or something I learned when I worked there with you guys just for the little time I did, the 18 months or whatever, was the fact that I learned that you guys were never really – and I heard some of the coaches say that you guys were into internal motivation, internal. We're going to work, worry about us, like, and we're going to hold ourselves to a standard. And, you know, I'd come from other places where it wasn't always like that.
Yeah.
And that's why it was a roller coaster all the time, because it was like, if the team talked shit about us, our team was ready that week. But if it was kind of a ho-hum week, our team fucking would fall asleep. And you'd be like, damn, I don't know if we're ready to go this week or not.
Yeah.
And you guys always had that magic. And I remember, I think it was Bill who said, he's like, watch, these teams that are externally motivated, it's a roller coaster all year.
I will say we did have one of those moments, though. We played the Texans in 2012. And they rolled into the stadium with the varsity jackets.
Oh, I remember. I was there.
And I remember
the
locker room kind of like, yo, these dudes came in varsity jackets.
Right, because they were 11-0 or 12-0 or something like that, right?
And they're sending a message like, they're here now. They're the varsity team, blah, blah, blah. And it just so happens that week when we came in, because that was the talk coming in. And Bill never does this. Like, Bill on Wednesday, I don't care who you're playing, he would find and make the best highlight tape you've ever seen of this team.
Like, we're playing the best team we've ever seen.
I mean, everything.
Yeah, right.
And he comes in that Wednesday, he goes, we're going to fucking destroy these guys. And if you could just see, like, everyone in that meeting room was like, yeah. And that whole, I mean, I think we beat them like 42.
We dominated.
Like, we killed them.
I don't even
want
to say we. I don't know why we say that. But
you were there with
us. I was there with you. I was. And I remember during that week breaking down film, or the week before, going, if they play like this the whole game, our coaches are going to fucking dice them up. Like, I remember one of my things I've said to people before during that week, I actually told some of the guys this at dinner last night, because, you know, Bill always had a project. Hey, here's a project. He would tell George Gotze at the time, Gotze was my boss, right? And then he would be like, hey, you got to do this, right? And he'd, you know, motherfuck me and everything else, right? And I'd be like, damn, I didn't even do anything. I said yes. And he'd be like, fucking get up there and do it. But I had to go back up on like a Thursday night, because They were worried not only about J.J. Watt, but they were worried about J.J. Watt batting balls down. Remember, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we started to formulate the whole game plan of let's get J.J. Watt on this side and we'll put all our receivers on the other side so he can never bat down a ball on third and seven or third and eight and we can keep drives going. And I don't think he batted a ball down the whole game.
Tom used to get pissed. They'd be out there with broomsticks.
Yes, right.
Sticking up like,
right.
You know, normally they have the little tennis racket and we would play J.J. Watt and Bill's like, that's not high enough. He bats down, he start reading off the stats, how many batted balls he has and everything.
Right.
And you would just see Tom, because it'd be 7-on-7. And those guys, you know, you're supposed to just stick it up and leave it there. And those guys, and Bill would tell these guys, like, hey, you got a reward for each pass you knock down.
Yeah.
So those guys are now be out there tracking where Brady's throwing and sticking up at the last minute. It would be hilarious.
Did you ever have a feeling in, like, 13 – you know, end of 12, 13, that like things like, did you know that like maybe they, Brady and the, like, you know, they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. Mm. I don't think they were necessarily thrilled with Tom's play at that point. Like it was good, but it wasn't like, you know, top of the league at that. Did you know that there was like maybe some unhappiness or a little bit there at all? Could you feel that in there?
I didn't because like, remember early in my career, my rookie year, we went 14-2. We lost in the division round.
Right.
Then we lose in the Super Bowl. Then we lose in the AFC Championship, lose in the AFC Championship, and then win a Super Bowl. So I'm like, I mean, what else are we looking for?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, I get it.
Right.
You know, in a perfect world, we win a Super Bowl all those years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, who does it?
Yeah, right,
but I'm like,
right,
out of all of these years, you know, you get my first 5 years, I played in 2 Super Bowls.
Right.
And 2 AFC championships, you know, 1 year that we had the best record in the NFL. My rookie year, the Jets beat us in a divisional round. But I'm thinking everything's great. Like,
right.
We're doing well. I think the most losses we had in any of those seasons was 4. We were 12-4 or we were 13-3. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, everything's going great. But you don't realize that. And I remember when we drafted Jimmy, it was kind of like
your second round,
second round.
Right,
like,
right.
And then, you know, you read all of the things where they're like, the team needs this. They should get this. And then everybody's like, why would they get a quarterback? And you don't realize it. But then you start to kind of see all that stuff transpire. And, again, it's the evolution of all teams. All teams look for your backup.
Yeah.
They look for the next guy that's going to take your spot.
Right. But deep in his career, you're thinking traditionally quarterbacks are coming to the end here. Right, yeah.
And again, I do think he took that personal. I think all players take that personal.
Agreed.
I think every player, if you draft a guy at a certain level behind them, they're going to help him and do, but they're going to be like, oh, you think I'm done?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I'll show you.
Exactly. And I think that's how 12 is. And I think he's always going to be like that. Even and all of the things he does next in life, that like he has an underdog mentality.
Yeah, I agree. I that's why I think if he announces games for Fox, he's going to be awesome because I know he works it. He's passionate. It's Brady. I have tremendous respect for him that way.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Goal for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
150 years, the Kentucky Derby's been an icon of racing and luxury.
I'm gonna shine my way.
The first Saturday in May, the world turns its attention here.
They're off in the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Oh, my goodness.
This is the place to be.
The 150th Kentucky Derby, Saturday, May 4th, on NBC and Peacock.
All right, other than that, right, you know, Brady gets a lot of credit for that, you know, and he should. I'm not saying that. But you guys had a lot of great players. Who do you think was, like, the most underappreciated Patriot that, like, the public doesn't know about how good they were to winning Super Bowls or even maybe the years you didn't win the Super Bowl? But, like, because you know, one thing that sucks about football, there's so many players,
so many
good players get forgotten about. And I try to bring that up here all the time where it's like, yeah, he's not a Hall of Famer, but this guy's a legend of the sport or a legend for this team, and we can't forget about that. Anybody jump to your mind there?
This guy's going to love this because he always feels like he doesn't get enough credit. I'll say Rob Ninkovich.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think on our defense – people know how great Chandler Jones was, but they knew more about that when he left, right? He went to Arizona, dominated. Hightower made a lot of big plays in big games. You know, Mayo was an all-pro player, Pro Bowls, Vince, same thing. But Rob Ninkovich was kind of a journeyman at one point, playing in Miami, comes to New England, really as a special teamer, backup long snapper, and gets on the field and just starts making plays, getting sacks, interceptions, playing like that kind of DN outside linebacker tweener role. Like, I always thought Ninko did a great job for us and never really got the credit he deserved for what he was able to do for the team year in and year out, of always being able to kind of rely on him being in that role. I mean, there were times we paid guys that played behind him more than what he was getting, what he was making, and it would always piss him off. I'll give Ninko his credit. I thought he was a great player.
That's a good call by you.
Yeah.
I mean, he was phenomenal. 3-4 outside linebacker. Was a better pass rusher than people realize.
Exactly.
Strong as hell in the run game. Did everything right. Yeah, he's total New England Patriot all the way there. All right, that was a good one. All right, how about the best team you ever played on? What was the best team? Was it one that won the Super Bowl? Was there one that didn't win the Super Bowl that you think was actually the best?
I would say if I had to rank them, I would rank the team that won the Super Bowl in 2014.
Yeah.
My rookie year, team that went 14-2.
And he lost the Jets and Rex Ryan at home on that Saturday night,
but
whatever it was.
We beat Aaron Rodgers didn't play when we played Green Bay. I think he had a concussion, but we beat Indy. We beat Pittsburgh. Like, we beat a lot of the top teams. We beat the Chargers. We beat a lot of the top teams in the league that year.
Right.
And lost to the Jets. And then I would say the 2018 team that won the Super Bowl I thought those teams were,
the Rams. Right.
Yeah. Like, obviously, that probably wasn't our most talented offense that year, but I thought the way we were able to, we could throw the ball, we could run the ball with Sony. We could use James White in a passing game. And then I thought defensively we were so multiple. We had guys like Van Noy and Hightower that could go in between playing linebacker, DN. We just had so many different guys that were versatile. And, you know, I think that my rookie year, that team was special because offensively, you know, we could go 12 personnel. We had, you know, Hernandez.
The best tight end duo in football.
We had those guys. Then we got Deion Branch back.
Right.
Like, we had that. And then defensively, we were just a spin-the-wheel team that year. Zone blitzes, blitz zero, man, like cover two. It was pretty cool as a rookie seeing that.
Well, I always was amazed in some years the defense would be exotic and crazy, and then another year you'd go, man, they're kind of plain and simple this year.
Yeah, yep. And I would say the last few years I felt like it was a little bit more simple, especially from a secondary standpoint. You know, I would say ever since 2020 – we lost a good amount of coaches. We lost different players that were kind of key to those things. But, yeah, the years before that, the Rams Super Bowl, we had played 96% man-to-man all game. The AFC Championship against Kansas City, we were 98% man-to-man in that game.
Right.
We get to the Super Bowl, we played, I think it was 70% zone.
Yeah. Like, brought out like the
quarters,
the Bears who beat the Rams. I think a little bit of that game.
We played quarters. We played like a cover three buzz coverage with the safety dropping down. And a lot of teams, like, you're not going to really throw out what you did all year in the biggest game. But like, that was built. That's what I loved about being in New England. Like, once you became a player that was kind of cerebral and locked into how you could attack different offenses and what you could do, it was so fun coming in on Wednesday and hearing the game plan and then being like, man, I think maybe if we did this, this would be a little bit better. We could be here. And then the freedom.
Yeah.
Like, Bill would always sell us, like, we're going to give you different parameters that you can do, but once you go on the field, like, this is your defense. Like, go. Like, if you see some, he would always tell me, whatever you see, 9 out of 10 times, we're going to agree with you. And, you know, we're going to see it probably exact same. He said, and the other time, you're probably going to see something that we wouldn't have noticed and put us in a better play that I even would have thought coming from the sideline. So just being able to be there. And, like, we've made plays in games where I've made the wrong check, where I thought, like, from watching film, I remember one time we played Houston, and I'm like, oh, this is a set that they're going to have a condensed formation. I'm checking cover two. It ends up being empty. But for some reason, I just felt like they went empty with the back all the way at one. I'm like, Hopkins was close. Fuller was close. I'm like, I feel like they're going to run their condensed split plays, but now they're going to try to show it to us out of empty.
Of that, right.
But those two wide guys are just going to end up being in a check down place anyway. And we end up getting an interception on it. And they were like, why did you check it? I was like, honestly, it just kind of all fit in my brain. I felt like I saw it before on film.
Your instincts just came out.
And whether we got an interception or not, and I got to the sideline, Bill would be like, why'd you do that? Okay, yeah. I understand. Like,
right. He trusted
it didn't work
you.
This
you
way,
were in
but
the trust tree again.
Exactly.
Right.
So I always thought that was cool because I don't know how many other guys or, you know, would get to do that in their defense where a coach would be like, hey, you just changed our whole defense on an empty check that we don't have. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Where that was never a problem in New England.
Brilliant guy, and I don't think people give Bill enough credit for he's got big balls.
Yeah.
He's got guts.
Yes.
Like, people don't realize that, right?
Some of the things that we would do
would
not be sound.
Right.
Like, I'm just being honest.
Maybe you just
would,
take a chance.
You would draw something up, and you'd be like, coach, but what if they do this? And he'd be like, if they have time, then that's going to be a touchdown.
Right.
Like, we get it.
He'd take calculated risks.
But
this
is what they've shown us. This is their tendency. They've done it over and over again. We watched it.
Yep.
Not just this year. We watched it over the last 3 years. This coordinator did it 15 years ago. And he would come in, and you'd be like, oh, you watched 15 years ago film. Like, I get it. I believe you, coach.
Yeah. Well, you talked about Bill. You knew when he was a little scared, right, that somebody knew him. Who was there a team or a coach where you always felt like, man, Bill knows them back and forth, and we know their checks and everything, right? I played a game against Bill in 2005, right? Mm-hmm. And it was John Gruden, right? And he was kind of with the Raiders there before, so it was very prevalent on Bill's radar, right? Mm-hmm. That we got to beat this. I got to figure out this offense. You know, of course, he grew up stopping Bill Walsh and the West Coast offense, so he knew the West Coast offense already. I used to tell people that. I used to be like, Bill knows the West Coast offense as good as any West Coast coach there is. Like, it was his obsession through the 80s. If you wanted to beat the Niners, you had to know the offense.
Yeah. Horizontal,
so,
yeah.
So, yeah, I played in 2005, and we would get in certain formations, and I'd be like,
They know
what fucking play's coming. They know what I just checked to.
Yeah.
You know? And he would give looks because he knew we were going to check to that, and then he'd go off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, like, such an experience for me. We got our butts whooped up there. We kind of hung around but lost, like, 28-0. It was, like, one of those games where you guys just slowly wore our asses out, right? But did you ever feel that way, like, as far as any team?
It would always be the coaches that had been coaching for a long time. Because he would love to pull up, like if we played Chan Gailey when Gailey was in Buffalo, like he would love to pull up film from like 15 or 20 years ago and show us and be like, look.
He's still doing the same thing.
He's still doing I'm telling you, this guy's not going to change.
Right.
Like, this is what he does. And anytime we played that and that happened, you know, and I can't think of the coach off the top of my head, but those guys that he would have coached against, you know, for the last, like, 20, 25 years, whether it been his time at the Giants or, like, where those guys – because, you know, as a younger player, even as a current player, you wouldn't always know, like, this guy's coaching history. And Bill would get up there and start telling you where this guy coached in the 80s and the set. And you're like, okay, coach, like, we get it. And he would run through that history, and then you would kind of get the feeling, like, he felt really comfortable going against some of these guys because he had coached against them for so long.
Yeah, right. Knew him back and forth.
Yeah.
On the question of, like, I asked you your team, right, that was the best one. Who's the best team you ever played against? You know, or just, you know, top two, three, the ones where you just went, man, they were real.
I think, obviously, the Legion of Boom, that Seattle team.
Yeah.
We played them in 2012 where you could kind of feel they beat us in Seattle.
It
might have been overtime, I think.
It was late in the game.
Yeah,
it might have been
post
deep post, right in the middle. Yep.
And you could feel it, right? Sherman yells in Brady's face.
You mad,
after
bro,
the game.
And all that crap, right?
You could feel like that's where they were headed. So then seeing them win a Super Bowl in 13 and then playing that team in 14, I thought that was a really special team that when we played them.
Definitely.
And then the Denver teams from when Peyton first got there in 13, you know, 14 and 15 when they won the Super Bowl, I thought those teams were, you know, you're going against Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Then on defense, you got Tlaib over there with Chris Harris.
Vaughn Miller, Chris Ward, or the TJ Ward, that safety.
Stewart, the other safety.
Yeah, you just was like, man, these guys,
those teams to me were stacked. That when we went to play them, you knew, like, all right, this is going to be a battle. This is a game of all games that you want to see. I mean, the Pittsburgh teams with Big Ben and Antonio Brown and those
guys. Well, why did you guys always own them? Like, you guys kind of –
it was weird, man. Like, we would play those games, and everyone would talk about all week how, like, it would be a battle between Pittsburgh's toughness and our finesse. And we would always be like, what finesse? Yeah, like, why we keep getting labeled as this?
Right.
And you talk about external kind of motivation. We always felt like that going into the game. And we always felt like, for some reason – people would kind of label that game as like us as underdogs. And every year when we would play them, Bill would be like, I don't fucking get it. And he would read off, oh man, we're 8-1 in the last 9 matchups against this team. And everybody's acting like we need to play our best game to win. We just need to show up and do what we do. And that would always be the attitude playing Pittsburgh. We always felt like everyone picked them over us anytime we played, whether it was going to be Sunday night game in Pittsburgh my rookie year, and we beat the brakes off them that, or, you know, AFC Championship in 16,
right,
where they're coming to us. And we just always felt like everyone thought that, you know, whether we had a good record or not, that they were going to beat us and be better than us. And it always created, like, this chip on our shoulder playing against Pittsburgh.
Like, how often did he ever bring out bulletin board material or that? I mean, I know you kind
of – at the end of the week, he would always –
there was something he would find?
Somebody would say something in the media because, you know, for every other team, like, you're playing the Patriots.
Right,
so
right.
It was, like, always something. And it would be funny because the way he would do it, he would come in there and let's say they say something about, like, Brady. He would read and he'd go, I mean – I'm not saying that. Or, I mean, Brady, that's what the fuck they think about you. I mean, whatever you've done in this league, I mean – so fucking this guy said it, right? That's what he thinks you are. Or, you know, he'd be like, you know, Hightower, you know, Mayo, you know, you guys, whatever the fuck you think of yourselves. They just said they can run for 200 yards this week.
Yeah.
Whatever you think, like, they just said right here, the plan is to run the ball against New England.
Right.
So, Vince, I mean, I don't know. You're a good player or not. I mean, they obviously don't think you're a fucking good player.
Yeah.
So he would come in there and you sit there and the way he would just build it up and – sometimes the quote would kind of be like, you know, the key to the game is running the ball.
Oh, right.
And it would be like, yo, that is a key to the game for them.
Yeah, right.
But he would kind of turn it to make you feel like they just said that, you know, they're going to run all over you. And I always thought that was interesting. And it would only come at the end of the week. And it would a lot of times.
Well, like a Friday morning meeting? Or
yes. Yeah, that's how it would be. Or a Saturday.
Yeah.
And I think it would come when he felt like we didn't have enough, like, hatred towards the team. Like, we need to build up a little bit more fire going into this game. And I think he always felt like, that's my specialty.
Right.
If anybody's going to bring a little hatred to the game, that's me. I'm going to bring it and make sure you see it. So I always thought he did a great job of that.
He wasn't, like, bringing up false crap or anything like that. It was
no, I just always thought he would twist things in a certain way. And, you know, a lot of times, like, when you're playing, you're not reading articles that different people are writing. So, like, you would take his word for whatever was in this article and however he spun it, you'd be like, man, that guy really said that?
Right.
Or at the end of my career, we have TVs, and they would put certain quotes on the TVs every day, so you walk by the TV and see what a guy said. So it would be small things like that every once in a while. Like it was big in 18, right, when we got to the playoffs and everybody said,
oh,
Tom was done, this team's
right,
done.
Right.
Like that was –
oh, yeah.
That was –
you guys beat the Chargers
and
Tom was like, oh, nobody thinks we're going to win next week and all that. And we were like, well, I don't know. But
that was –
yeah, that was the thought.
In our meeting room, that's
what it was going on.
Felt like,
right,
yeah,
right.
No doubt
about
it.
Yeah, I remember actually making fun of him that week. I was like, I don't know. I'm How thinking the Patriots go to the Super Bowl. I don't know what you're talking about. But
you couldn't tell us any different.
Right.
We felt like everyone thought we were done. I mean, Charles Barkley picked the Chargers, then he picked the Chiefs. And who's at our Super Bowl practice Friday before the Super Bowl?
Good old Chuck.
He picked the Rams in the game.
Right. Did he really?
Picked the Rams.
Damn. What was he thinking? He picked Jared Goff and the Rams over Tom Brady and the Patriots. What the hell? That's why he's a basketball analyst right
exactly,
there.
Exactly, right?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
For the world's greatest athletes.
This is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Gold for the United States! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics. This summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
What about you, and we'll wrap it up here soon, but like you defensively, you know, I'd love to know, you know, when you were sitting on the sideline, who was the defensive player? Like you talking about Ray Lewis before we came out. You're like, man, everybody needs to experience Ray Lewis. I got to experience it once. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I feel like the game was actually – I wasn't on the Patriots. I feel like the game was actually over before the game started when we played against Ray Lewis. He was dancing before the first snap, and I feel like our whole O-line looked over and were like, oh, my gosh. I don't know if we're going to be able to block them and these guys today. And I felt like the game was over. I really did. He, like, intimidated us off the field right away. But, you know, safety that you looked up to or admired throughout your career, and then just the defensive player, you were always like, holy shit, who is that guy? I mean, he's unreal.
Yeah, man. So one of the guys that I loved watching was Charles Woodson because, you know, he was the corner that moved to safety.
Right.
So watching Woodson and, you know, all these guys I would go up to right after the game and tell them, and then I would say for that era of when I was young, it was Woodson, Ed Reed, and Troy Polamalu were the guys when I first got in.
Right.
And I was a corner, but those guys were the safeties where I was like, man, you know. And then as a corner when I first got in, it was Revis and Champ Bailey.
Right.
For me, you know, going to Rutgers, Revis was playing for the Jets. That's what it was. Like it was, you know, Sundays watching Revis and then coming out in the draft and people – like mentioning like, hey, you know, what's your favorite corner? Hey, some people said you're physical like Revis. I'm like, yeah, really? And then my rookie year going to the Pro Bowl, I remember going up to Champ Bailey and being like, man, like we had a poster in our dorm of you. Like that was, you know, in our dorm. And then, you know, later in my career being a safety, the guys I love watching that, you know, I felt like my peers were E. Weddle, who I developed a relationship with, and text Eric Weddle.
Awesome dude.
I thought he really did a great job of being in San Diego and requesting the money, right? You talk about this, the markets, we talk about the running back market right now. Eric Weddle taking the safety market to $8 million a year was huge when he signed that deal. And then Earl Thomas took it to $10 million, and watching Earl in the way him and Cam would play together, and Earl would fly around, Cam would knock your
they
head off.
Unreal.
Those guys were just unreal. So that era, just being able to play with those guys, and, you know, I thought, you know, for me, even being mentioned with the Weddles and the Earl Thomases and the Cam Chancellors was really special for me in those early 2010s. And then, you know, Harrison Smith came in and Tyrann Mathieu, those guys kind of took it over and, you know, continue to take it to the next level. And then now, as an older guy, retired guy, I love watching the position because – like, people try to create these lists, and it's so hard to make now. And I feel like when I first got in the league, it wasn't like that.
Right. Safeties were safeties. Now there's 10 different versions of you guys.
It was clear cut. Like, Troy, you know, Charles Woodson, Ed Reed, like, they were – that was different. Like, they were – you know, those were the guys. And everybody else was, you know, pretty good guys. Like, you know, they were good safeties. But now, I mean, each team kind of has a guy that you're like – man, like, Justin Simmons is really good.
Yeah.
Quandre Diggs is really good.
Right.
You know, Derwin James is a dog. Like, you can go down the list. Minka Fitzpatrick.
There's a man. Javon Holland we were talking about the other day, right?
Who doesn't get enough credit.
Right.
Who I think over the next 2 years, people are going to start to see, like, man, this dude is a stud.
Right.
And, you know, we could be here for hours listing and why this guy's great at what he does and why this guy's different, but he's great. So I love watching safety play now.
Safety play is – I think it's actually maybe as valuable as it's ever been in the history of football.
Yep,
because you
got to
be so versatile, and you can't expect the corners to play man-to-man all the time against these receivers and these offenses right now. So you got to have safeties that can play zone and do all the things the right way.
Yeah,
you talk about those Seattle guys. I think Cam Chancellor and Michael Bennett are like the two of the most underrated, awesome players I've ever seen in my life on the defensive side of the ball. They never get the credit.
And it was because kind of like Earl and Sherman got a lot
too
of
much,
credit.
Yeah, right.
For,
Cliff
you know,
Averill was getting the sacks and Bobby Magner's in the middle, and they got overlooked a little that way.
But I always thought that team was ran by the heart of Cam Chancellor.
Agreed.
Like, the Super Bowl was over in 13 when Cam hit Demaryius Thomas.
Oh, the first snap of the game, or the second snap of the game.
DT was that, right? DT was the big kind of receiver that if he came in and cracked you, he took your head off.
Yeah.
Or if he ran, you couldn't tackle him.
Right.
And I think Denver threw him the ball, and they saw Cam come and hit him, and they were like, holy.
That's Seattle like, 3. Peyton thought he had man-to-man crossers, and they're going to rub him there. No, Seattle 3. Yeah, it was just about that.
Getting a chance to play with Martellus in 2016 and then briefly in 17 before he stopped, and then Mike Bennett coming in 19.
They're one of a kind.
Getting to play with both Bennett brothers was a treat all in itself. Like, no one should get the privilege of having an opportunity to play with both of them. Two of the craziest guys I met, great, great players, but I think being around them as people was even more satisfying, seeing how their brains work. But, you know, when we played Seattle in 14 at Super Bowl, no one got talked about more in our squad meetings was Mike.
I know.
I mean,
I was talking to coaches up there. You know, you've seen America's game that year. Yep. I mean, as the Bills talking to, that's all he's talking about.
If we don't block
this guy, he's going to ruin the game. Yeah.
Over and over that week.
Right, he was unreal.
Yeah,
he,
I mean, double teamed him as much as we could. Just when he was at that three tech, Bill just believed, like, he was unblockable.
He was unblockable.
At the three tech.
He started the phrase for me where I think needs to be a defensive stat, where I called it, when I first started working in this business, I called fuck the play up. You know, he didn't get a tackle, he didn't get a sack, but he was the reason the play didn't work.
Exactly.
Right? There needs to be a fuck the play up stat. Right. You know, he gets bust through, the running back got to go a different way, the linemen run into each other.
Somebody else gets a tackle.
Somebody gets a tackle.
It's because of him.
It's all because of him.
Yeah.
All right, last thing, all right, because we got enough to do today and we're going to be talking. But you talked about, like, some of the open field runners and Lamar and all of that, right? But you're the quarterback of a defense. I want to know, were you more amazed – the first time you saw Aaron Rodgers in 2014 in person when he got to play, because you said Matt Flynn was hurt playing that first time. Yep. Mahomes in 2018.
Oh, you putting
that. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right. I am. Welcome to the media, motherfucker.
Oh, man.
All right. And then what about even – all right, just give me. Who were you more amazed with out of those two the first time you saw him or got on the field? Not film, not whatever, but when you saw it in person.
It was Aaron.
It was.
Man, because you heard everything about Aaron, and then we didn't play him, like you said, in 2010. And then we go to Lambeau, and we play him late in the season. I think it was either last week of November or first week of December.
Yeah, cold 425 game on CBS.
We cover everybody.
Right.
Look back. Breaks Ninkovich
down. He's still dancing back there.
He runs for 30 yards.
Right.
Then you come back, you know, he hits – somebody where they have a half a step, but the ball is placed perfectly.
In his pocket,
like,
right.
You can't.
Yeah.
And I think we go in at halftime, and it's like 20-6 or something. They're kind of steamrolling us, and we end up coming back, and we give up, I think, just a field goal in the second half against them. But just like the guy was just so on point, where like early for Mahomes, it was like he would have a mistake here or there, like – you know, a bad throw lead to an interception, but then he would just make a crazy play.
He makes some crazy play,
where Aaron Rodgers, it felt like every time we were a half step slow or we were just a little off, he took advantage. And then I have the funniest story. In 18, we play Aaron Rodgers in New England. Again, another Sunday night football game.
Right.
And we play Aaron, and, you know, we're disguising, so we're giving a good amount of – this is in – 2018, we kind of introduced our blitz zero, and we would be aggressive, and we would send everybody. So off that look, me and Daron Harmon, we would come, and we would show 11 down. We would get down there, and sometimes we would come, and sometimes we would run out. So I had now a good beat on it. I'm like, I would tell Dude, I'm like, dude, don't leave until you see me get ready to go.
Right.
Because I'm like, I'm looking, and I'm just watching the play clock. You know, these great quarterbacks – they want to know what you're in. So they would take that play clock all the way down. And I would tell Daron, like, right when we get to about 4, we got enough speed to get out and get to where we need to get to.
Right.
So we're having great success in the first half against Aaron. We're doing this. We're messing with him. We hit on the blitz zero a couple times. He got a couple incompletions. Like, feeling good. We come in at halftime. And I don't know who tells Bill this, but it's a cold game. So Aaron has his little heat warmer. And – they come down and Bill goes, every time he takes his hands out of the heat warmer, the ball's coming. I'm like, really, guys? Like this is what you're going to bank on?
Sounds like an Ernie Adams thing.
Yes, right? So they're like, in this half, when he takes his hand out, go, because we're cutting it too close. I'm like, yo, we're winning. Like, what are we talking about? So come out. It's like early.
He started doing
quarter.
More dummy snap count, probably.
He comes out.
Right. Yeah.
We take off.
Right.
So now I'm like, I come walking back to kind of get in a disguise. Aaron goes, smiles ear to ear looking at me.
Right.
So now we get back in it, plays okay, but now he keeps doing it. So now maybe two plays later, we come with the all-out blitz. He gets it like we were talking about yesterday in rehearsal, back foot.
Right. Just flick it, wings whatever.
It, hit Scandling on like a 60-yard pass on my brother because he knew it was blitz zero. Gets it, takes one step, and launches it. And I get to the sideline like, hey, can we drop the hands in the freaking couch now? And they're like, yeah, our bad. I'm like, it's a national. And I hit him with the Bill line.
Yeah.
It's the fucking National Football League. You think that he's going to give us that easy
for the rest
of the game?
Right.
But that's when I was like, this guy, he's different.
Yeah.
Like, and he has that swag to him to smile at you before the play. Same thing Brady did later when he went to Tampa.
Right.
We hit a blitz zero and he sees me. And Brady, I mean, he practiced against us.
Yeah,
He sees me down and he looks and he completes a big third down. He goes, really, Dev?
Yeah.
You fucking blitz zero me?
You
think you fucking blitz zero me?
Disrespect to a quarterback like that. Right.
And I was like, sorry, Tom.
Yeah, sorry, right. Sorry, sir. Yeah, all right, real quick. This is like one thing on Burrow. One thing on Josh Allen, all right, just because those are probably my four guys right there right now. You know what I mean? So, yeah, let me hear real quick. Just what jumps out to you about Josh Allen right off the bat?
Dog.
Yeah.
Like, playing against him, we played against him last year Thursday night. He's running the sideline. I give him everything I got. And he gets up, he goes, damn, old man, you try to smoke me. But, again, some of my worst moments towards the end of my career were because, you know, playing against Josh Allen in Buffalo.
Right.
And I just love whether it was a mistake he would have early in the game or he would just have that dog where he wouldn't stop. And it always felt like you were playing against a guy that was having the time of his life.
Right.
Laughing, joking, you know, trying to run through guys, like getting up. It was just always that awesome energy.
Right.
And I think with Burrow, it's that swag, right? Yeah. It's in the game, he's kind of Joe Cool. Like, he's always going to be
that Brady
guy.
Way about him.
And
right.
he knows what he has out there, right? He knows he's throwing to T. Higgins and Boyd and Chase. And Chase.
Yeah,
like, he knows, like, man, my guys are better than you, and I'm going to play like that. I'm never worried. I'm never thinking of panic. And I always felt like last year when we played them, it was like that. And we had them on the ropes. Like, we had these guys – where, you know,
you kind of messed it up, but then you came back and then you kind of messed
four,
it up. Right.
Ball on a 6-yard line.
Right.
And we fumble the game away. But I never felt like Joe Burrow was worried about us beating him. It was always like, he was like, man, y'all can do whatever you want.
Right.
We're still going to win this game.
Right.
And I think that's what's cool about those guys. And I would say Mahomes in that same category.
Yeah.
Always just cool. Like, we're going to be fine. We're going to find a way to win this game. When you talk about those AFC guys that are, and obviously you throw Aaron in there now.
Yeah, but right.
Those kind of young guys that, you know, are going to take this league to another level.
Yeah, they are taking it to another. I know. Yeah. I the more I sit here with you, the more I want to ask questions. I actually get more and more because now you got me thinking, like, wait, you played against Justin Jefferson last year and Jamar Chase and Tyreek Hill.
Don't bring up Justin Jefferson at Thanksgiving.
Oh, I know. Freaking. Yeah, I know. That was a bad one.
Chase wasn't as, but we held up against
you held up against Chase.
Yeah, we held up a little bit, but JJ, like, and then watching the quarterback show on Netflix and them showing him running through the double team, just, and then he runs a 9 route. I hit him as soon as he catches the ball, because like he was just tough because he had everything.
Yeah,
right.
He got
can
everything.
Run the quick routes. You know, as a taller guy, you know, sometimes you're like, man, it's more of a one-cut guy.
Right.
He's not going to be a great route runner.
But
no,
he is.
He can run routes. Right. Like, he can do everything on the field. I thought he was a really tough matchup, and he's a guy we don't see that much,
right?
Because
right,
he was in Minnesota. So I thought that was really tough playing against
that kind of guy. Scare you more? Does like a Tyreek Hill?
I hated playing this when I was playing corner.
Yeah,
the shifty, quick guys. I hated playing against those guys. So Tyreek Hill knows. Like whenever we played them, Tyreek Hill was gonna see a heavy dose of me.
Yeah,
helping and leaning to his side.
Right.
Which made it tough now going to Miami because Waddle's no slouch on
the other side.
And, you know, leaving him one-on-one is a problem, too.
Yeah,
so it's a tough task, you know. And I think, you know, early in my career, you think about some of the matchups, the Brandon Marshalls, the Reggie Waynes,
right.
Talking about those guys and playing them. And now you look up, you know, the league's back
there's
in that
era.
There's
a new breed, right? Yeah.
Last year we played Davante Adams in Vegas.
Yeah.
There's just so many of these guys who are guys, like not just like, yeah, you know, he's a good receiver. No, these are guys.
Yeah,
like when you play them, if you don't have a plan, it's going to be 180, 200 yards. Like it's going to be one of those days. So, you know, last year we played Hopkins. Like we played all of the guys last year
that were dogs
that you had to have a specific game plan for them of not how to stop them, but we got to contain them and not let them just go crazy.
Right. Yeah, that's when you know you've gone to the next level. It's not even like we know he's going to get 100. Yeah. We just don't want 200.
That's what I knew. Like next year, probably the couch is going to be a little bit more comfortable for me than game planning and having to play against these guys. I'd rather talk about them.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, good. Well, welcome. All right, and we're going to start it off tonight on Sunday Night Football.
Hey, we can do this again.
Hey.
And this is – we're coworkers now.
You don't got to ask. Yeah, tell me, okay?
Next time I'm going to come button up, too, to fit the
Please do. It's always buttoned up here. I unbutton my mouth, but I keep the button top.
I like that.
And tight,
I like that.
All right. So, hey, I hope everybody enjoyed it. Devin McCourty, the newest member of NBC Sports, he's the man. And I can't wait to everybody to see what this guy's got. He's got a ton of knowledge. He's got personality like you're seeing. And hopefully me and him are doing this for a long, long time together. You the man. I appreciate
it.
Seriously. You know, much love to the McCourty twins in general and to you for doing this. I appreciate it, man.
Appreciate you.
All right, mofos. All right, homies. You know where to find me. We'll be back at it. Ahmed Fareed on Monday. Check us out tonight, Sunday Night Football, if you listen by then. Either way, we finally got football. It's back. And next week, we got real preseason games throughout the league. So you know where to find it. Chris Sims on button. Appreciate everybody. Clap it up. Peace.
Let's go.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.